This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasoline. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
Okay, it's taken a few weeks, but I've made my resolutions for the new year. It's still early enough in January that people haven't seen the last few weeks. Say, Happy New Year! Any resolutions for 2009? And finally, there are. I resolved to take no more than 10 items through the self-checkout lane at the grocery store, and never more than 4 produce items. Look, the self-checkout is meant to be the modern express lane, without having the store spend labor on the cashier for that area. So I promise to not clog the checkout by slowing things down. However, the folks scanning their own full family of 8 shopping carts should know I've made no resolutions about shooting Chinese Death Stars when behind them in line. I resolve to only honk mildly at the drivers causing near automobile accidents in our area traffic circles. A reminder to those folks unfamiliar with the traffic circle, if you are on the outside attempting to enter the circle, yield to other vehicles before continuing. If you are on the inside continuing around, drive safely, but do not stop. You have the right of way. Politely stopping for others while inside the circle is no different than suddenly stopping in the middle of any other road. Be safe. Don't be stupid. And I have not resolved to stop cursing at these near-accident drivers. I resolved to wear a towel when in the locker room. I'm not sure that I ever had the goods to wander around in front of others naked, but I can confirm that most of these other guys don't either. I'm not a Puritan. And don't believe nudism will be punished in the afterlife, but come on. Obviously, you're naked while you shower and when you dry off with a towel, but must you walk from the shower to the locker swinging free? And worse yet, you towel dry and still feel the need to go commando on your walk to the bathroom? You wear a towel, and I resolve not to wave my body parts at you. Finally, a year where I can keep my New Year's resolutions. Oh, and as you'll learn throughout the hour today, we should all resolve to volunteer at a very important place in our hearts. All right, today's program, we'll have Marnie Allen is in the studio joining us from the Salvation Army. Marnie, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's always nice for people who donate hours of their very special Sundays to come in and spend it here in the studio, although it's a heck of a lot warmer in here than it is outside, which isn't always the case. All right, Marnie, from the Salvation Army here in Charlottesville, Transitional Housing and the Soup Kitchen.
Yes. An odd combination, I know.
Well, and that was going to be my question is, how did you end up at the Salvation Army doing these two sort of oddly comparable jobs?
Well, I came to the Salvation Army because I actually was in social services and looking for housing for a family I was working with. The position of director for transitional housing was open, and I thought, I could do that. And it sort of fell into place, and once I got there, I also fell into place that I became the director of the soup kitchen. So,
Social service background?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
And if you call me sir during the rest of the hour, we're going to have a real problem. This is probably the most informal hour of radio in our area. All right, transitional housing. So you've told us why, how it became a career for you with this little bit of background on social service. Salvation Army in Charlottesville, most people think of it as we did during our promotion for the week, people ringing the bells out front of the grocery stores and other retail stores during the holiday season.
Yeah.
But there's a lot more to it.
There is a lot more to it. Although the bell ringing is very, very important, provides a lot of funding for our day-to-day operations. We have an emergency shelter. We have the transitional housing and the soup kitchen. We have a coordinator of volunteer services. Last year, we had over 400 volunteers for various projects, and several people sort of do ongoing volunteer work in the kitchen. We have our own social services department. We have a homeless intervention program. We have a child care on site. So there are lots of things going on.
And again, as people think of it as the people ringing the bells over the holidays, I'm assuming that's your main fundraiser.
It's one of our biggest fundraisers. I don't know that it's our main fundraiser. It's probably the most well-known. But there are several fundraisers that we do throughout the year. Some people may have heard of the Taste This event that happened. It was several different sort of high-end restaurants. You bought a ticket, you got to go around and taste all the food. That was a pretty big fundraiser for us as well.
So. Let's jump right into the main topic of the day. We are here with Marnie Allen from the Charlottesville Albemarle Salvation Army. We're going to talk about a variety of programs that the Salvation Army provides for our community. But a big part of today is transitional housing and how the economy has affected our community, and transitional housing is a big way to relieve some of that. We're going to talk about the soup kitchen as well, some of Marnie's specialties and the programs that she directs. But transitional housing, let's start with the easy question. The difference between transitional housing and a shelter, because Salvation Army provides both.
Mm-hmm.
Is transitional housing the only part of that that exists in the Charlottesville area?
MACA has Hope House. It's a smaller program than we have, and there also is a transitional kind of housing through the Shelter for Help and Emergency. But again, those are much smaller, and they're targeted just for women and families.
All right. So what is transitional housing in comparison to a shelter?
In our case, I can't speak to every case, but in our case, the emergency shelter is a walk-in, done on a walk-in basis. So anyone can, if we have a bed open, it's yours. There's no cost to stay there. The expectation is that you will look for work if you're not working, and you can't actively use illegal substances.
You're talking about the
drugs. Right.
But alcohol is not illegal.
Okay, so you're right.
But that's what you mean, right? Is that
if
you're living, if you're in the shelter, no drugs and alcohol.
Right.
Okay.
And again, the expectation is you don't have to pay anything to stay there. The only thing that we ask is that if you're not working, that you actively are seeking employment and that you help in our soup kitchen. So they help clean up after meals.
Okay.
And in the transitional housing, if there is a history of substance abuse, you have to be clean for at least 6 months and be able to show that you've been clean and sober. And again, you cannot use drugs or alcohol while you're there. With the shelter, you can stay for up to 6 months. We ask folks in transitional housing to commit to stay for at least 6 months, and they can stay for up to 2 years. They do pay a fee. They pay, which pays for my services, case management services, and I can talk more about what that means. Three meals a day, and then sort of what people think is rent, and that's $255 a month.
So the Salvation Army provides transitional housing.
Right.
And that includes three meals a day.
Right.
And it's at least 6 months, or meant to be at least 6 months.
Right. And again, they can stay for up to 2 years. So it's a very unique program. because it really allows us to work with folks to build the skills that they need to become self-sufficient.
Do they find you, or does Salvation Army find them?
Referrals come from all different sources. We get referrals from the shelter. We get referrals from Shelter for Help and Emergency. We get referrals from social services, from schools, self-referrals. People have heard, you know, around, what is this about? They call, ask for information. Since I've been there, I have never had to seek out applicants. I have plenty of people who are wanting a place there.
Do they come from the shelter?
Sometimes they come from the shelter, not always.
And with the shelter, because I know that at least from things that I've seen, on whether it's on television or in a movie, the shelters that you see there, they stay for the night and then they have to leave and then they have to come back to find a bed. Is that true?
That is not the case. Once they have a bed, it's theirs until they leave.
So it seems like there would be quite a waiting list for both facilities.
There are.
And what sort of turnover rate is there?
Well, it's difficult to say because there's so many factors that go into people leaving. They can come up on the housing list. An opportunity can come up. They can get a job, a very good job, and be able to move on faster than expected. Unfortunately, some people don't want to follow the rules and they're asked to leave the program. So it's very difficult to say, you know, how long the waiting list is and the turnover rate, because there's so many variables that go into it.
It's 13 minutes after the hour here on WNRN's Wake Up Call. I'm Rick Moore. Marnie Allen is in the studio today as we talk about the area's Salvation Army, and specifically right now, transitional housing, how that works and contributes to the community's needs. Feel free to dial up, ask a question, make a comment, 979-0919. Sean is here today. Maybe you're a little further out in the listening area, like Lovingston's 94.7. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. That's a toll-free number if you want to call up on that line. And then there's WNRN Studio, which is an instant message key for us. Marnie, I'm curious. You talk about people being allowed to stay a maximum of 6 months at the shelter and needing to make an effort to find a job. With transitional housing, they're meant to stay a minimum of 6 months, while I'm assuming making effort to find a job.
They have to already be employed.
They have to already be employed. So to ask a double question, what happens if someone in the shelter finds a job but uses the shelter to build up their savings? What happens if someone in the transitional housing program loses their job?
Well, I would work with them to find employment. Once they're in, you know, we do everything we can to help them. So, I mean, it happens. Hopefully, you know, they can find employment fairly quickly because you know, there is a fee in staying in transitional housing, and if you can't make that fee, it becomes problematic.
We have a call from Scott. Scott, are you with me?
I am.
Question?
Sure. I realize that there are a variety of types of needs for people in the community, including short-term, longer-term, and for a variety of purposes, but do any of you all have any feel for what kind of need there is versus what our resources are? You did mention there's constantly a waiting list, but any idea what percentage of people that are in need at any one point are served?
So you're talking about, like, I know that the district has a homeless count that they do once a year. Is that what you're talking about, the number of people that are identified as being homeless, and maybe another number added to that that qualifies as being needy versus the number of beds that are available? Is that what you're talking about?
Well, that would certainly be one part of the population that is in need. There are also people who are in need of more just a short-term issue as well as longer term. I mean, there are also issues in terms of some transitional housing for people who are just out of incarceration and so forth. So just any idea overall, if we could have as many beds and spaces in a facility as we needed, how many more would we need compared to what we have now? And just any sort of comments on how close does our current resources come to meeting our needs?
All right, I'm going to hang up and let you listen while Marnie tackles that question.
Okay.
Those are excellent questions. I just recently joined a committee with OAR to address folks coming out of jail. It's a very underserved population, and there are not enough resources. One of the biggest problems is that these folks don't have jobs coming out of jail, and so for transitional housing, they wouldn't qualify, and normally the shelters are all full. There's also TJAC, which is the area board coalition of people that serve folks who are dealing with homelessness, are talking about a sort of a single occupancy apartments, but there is still a great need for resources and for units. That's probably one of the hardest things to get is just a building or a facility. There's zoning issues, there's financial issues, there's, you know, several factors that go beyond my scope of knowledge, but I can tell you that there are not enough resources.
Well, let's limit it to Salvation Army then. Scott, thanks, because I think you're pushing us directly into some of the great questions that are out there. 979-0919-1877-WNRN-ROCKS if you have a question that Scott's led you to or you have your own. Marnie Allen here from the area Salvation Army. What do you know in terms of the Salvation Army's waiting list for the shelter or for the transitional housing?
I know that our shelter is always full. Right now during the winter months, there is an alternative, Pacham Runs.
How many beds?
We have 58 beds, and there's a women's side and a men's side. So we take families, we take singles. It's a little tricky with families. Again, if it's a male head of household and no female counterpart and the children are older and female, they can't stay together in the shelter, which can be really a difficult decision for parents. I have 9 apartments, 4 of which are single units, which means 1 bedroom, 5 of which have 2 bedrooms. The technical capacity of those are the single bedrooms can hold up to 4 people. The 2 bedrooms can hold up to 6. They're small and it's really tight. So I try not to put, you know, a parent or 2 parents and 2 kids in a 1 bedroom. But if that's all we have available and they meet the criteria, I will. But again, we could expand definitely. And that comes into funding, which is why we ask for donations and ask for people to give so that we can make those expansions and better serve the folks that need our help.
All right, Scott, that's a great question. I think it leads to a lot of other questions that we're going to continue with during this hour with Marnie Allen from the Salvation Army. Dial us up, 979-0919. See if you can ask something similar to Scott in terms of quality questions for the hour. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS, 979-0919. Right now, markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and Shenandoah Valley. Mostly cloudy today, highs in the upper 30s, wind chill of 30 degrees. Mostly cloudy tonight. Lows 20 to 25, slightly warmer in the Richmond area. Mostly cloudy tomorrow, slight chance of precipitation. Highs 35 to 40, wind chill lower than 30. Right now in the valley, clear and 37. Cloudy in Lynchburg where it's 33. Cloudy in Richmond and 36. Cloudy in Charlottesville and 33.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And let's thank New Dominion Bookshop for their support today. They're now taking advance orders for signed copies of John Grisham's new novel, The Associate, due out on January 27th. No in-store signing is planned, but you can reserve your copy at New Dominion Bookshop between 4th and 5th Street on Charlottesville's Downtown Mall or at 295-2552. New Dominion Bookshop between the 4th and 5th Street on the Downtown Mall here in Charlottesville. And support also coming from Field School of Charlottesville. It's a boys' middle school dedicated to developing well-rounded boys of character and accomplishment. You can learn more about Field School at their open house on Tuesday at 9 a.m. Information and directions can be found at fieldschoolcv.net. All right, back to Marnie Allen and our conversation about the Salvation Army's programs such as transitional housing. Marnie, you were talking about the need for more housing, the need for more apartments, the need for more beds because of the waiting list. How do you find those? I mean, obviously you need money, but I would think that there's some effort being put into finding places to do that. But can you share some of the efforts in terms of, you know, the battles that you face both internally at Salvation Army and externally with the rest of the community?
Well, I know there are a lot of people that are working on this issue. Again, to mention, you know, I try to sit on as many committees as I can, do as much outreach as I can, community networking to find out where the resources are, what we can do, grants, other projects going on that maybe we can piggyback onto. I'm sort of new in the game, so I'm still learning all of that. There are a couple different agencies who are trying to find funding. One of the biggest challenges is just finding a building, finding an appropriate building and zoning. That seems to be one of the biggest challenges, aside from the financial challenges.
I'm curious, you talk about, back to the transitional housing, which is finding somebody who has a, or providing housing for someone who has a job, mm-hmm. and helping them if they lose that job. You are, I think you use the word case management,
right,
to help them do what they need to do to stay in the housing. Is there some sort of money management assistance? Because I think that I would assume, we all know where that leads us, that there is, that part of the problem for not having a home or mortgage, the money to pay a mortgage or a rent, is improper money management.
Right. So, oftentimes, what we see are folks coming to us who have gotten behind in rent, and so their credit is ruined, and no one will rent to them, and they have bounced around from family member to friend, sometimes hotels, which will suck you dry in a heartbeat, very expensive way to live. Oftentimes, folks can sort of handle day-to-day expenses or could pay rent, but they can't come up with a deposit. It's just too much in addition to what the normal expenses would be. So if you think about sort of a house and the foundation would be your financial management, and that's their primary goal when they come, is to help them get out of debt, rebuild their credit, pay off, you know, debts and different things. And that's part of my job, is doing all of that. I do credit counseling, budgeting, money management skills with every resident. And then from there, depending on the needs of the particular family or individual, we build a case management plan with goals to address that individual's needs.
What about job security or even finding the job? You mentioned that if someone in the transitional housing, which is meant to be for a minimum of 6 months, a maximum of 2 years, while someone finds more permanent residence, obviously a big part of that is having steady income.
Right.
So where does the where is the line drawn between you helping them find a job and someone in need finding their own job? I mean, is there a pile of businesses that you have, you know, tacked onto the wall that says, hey, send us people to talk to? Or do you go through the paper with them and make the phone calls? Or where does that,
again,
where does that lie?
Again, it's done on an individual basis. You know, everybody's needs are a little bit different. Everybody's personalities are a little bit different. Not to, to use a clinical term, level of functioning. They should be at a level where I don't need to hold their hand through the process. I certainly can help them, but they should be at a place where they're independent enough where they can do a job search on their own. Sometimes they need help. A lot of my residents aren't computer savvy, don't have any computer skills. And as we know, so many places now are going to online applications, things like that. So I assist them in the process of filling out the application online and looking online, but they really should be out there taking the initiative.
In terms of my understanding, well, I'm not going to give away where the residencies are. I don't believe that that's important to the program. But I would assume that more than half, a majority of folks might not have steady transportation. Is that a fair assumption?
I don't believe that's the case in transitional housing. It very well could be in the emergency shelter. But folks... you know, they're on the bus line, so they can use the buses.
And that's assuming that we can call the buses to be steady transportation. Because if you read the paper, there are occasionally, it seems like once a year, twice a year, there are articles about somebody who has to take 2 hours on the bus to get to their job.
Right. So it's not ideal in some cases, but it is an available option. Many of the folks have jobs that they can walk to, and then others have their own transportation. It is more challenging, I think, in the emergency shelter than in transitional housing.
How does the Salvation Army, are there any programs that help in this area rather than sort of, I guess not requiring, but certainly making it a little more difficult, even if you're on the bus line. But if you don't have your own car or you don't live next to someone nearby that you can trust with a daily ride to your work,
yeah.
Seems like that would almost limit your job search as well. Is that true? Do you hear that from folks in your system?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a challenge that they face.
And how... are those people aided?
Well, there is the VUE program that helps folks find jobs. And aside from that, you know, that's a good question and something we should probably look into.
Is there any, do you have businesses that come to you and say, you know, this is what I need, this is what I'm looking for, I'm in this area, or in some sort of volunteer work instead of providing monies, that they provide rides or other things like that?
No, I haven't had that happen yet. But again, I'm sort of new, so that may happen over time. But that's part of why I do community outreach and, you know, network with as many folks as I can, because you never know who's going to turn around and say, you know, I've got this, or... for instance, just on Friday, I had a gentleman call that says he had a room for rent. And he said the Salvation Army had helped him long ago, and it was important for him to be able to help. So it wasn't a job opportunity, but it was a very affordable room for rent. So those things do happen, and I suspect that as I stay longer, more of those kinds of calls will come in.
11:30 here on the Wake Up Call. Marnie Allen is here from the Charlottesville Albemarle Salvation Army. Right now we're talking about transitional housing and the difference between transitional housing and an emergency shelter. Feel free to dial us up, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Make your comment, ask your question. We're going to get into some of the other programs that are available at the Salvation Army. Marnie also directs the soup kitchen here in town. Let me take a moment and thank 45fix.com for supporting WNRN. If you have a project but not the time, there's a simple way to find a contractor. From kitchen and bathroom remodeling, house painting, to decks and siding, it's 45fix.com. Immediate, no-obligation estimates available anytime. The number 4, the number 5, and the word fix.com. And for those of you who listen on a regular basis, you're aware that I volunteer at the Nelson County SPCA, the Almost Home Pet Adoption Center. And just to toss out there, if you maybe live on the south side of the county or live in Nelson County and are listening, the Pet Adoption Center is going to be having a chili event today, asking people to come over and volunteer, and, or at least talk about what they can do to help volunteer and do some fundraising. It's today from noon to 3. And it'll be at the Tuckahoe School Clubhouse, which is at the main entrance of the Stony Creek section at Wintergreen down in Nellisford. All right, 11:32 here with Marnie. Marnie, let's jump over to the soup kitchen for a little bit. Still lots of questions about the transitional housing, but I want to talk about the soup kitchen.
Okay.
Because it would seem to me that between the transitional housing and the soup kitchen, as we tie them together, that you would have seen a much greater use in these due to the economic issues from the last half of 2008.
Yeah, over the past, I would say, about 3 months, and this is a rough estimate because it's, we, you know, it's different numbers happen every day, but I would say an increase of about 35% has happened. And when I came on board in April, I would say in the beginning of the month, we averaged about 50 people for dinner. And then towards the end of the month, it got to be about 80. And it increases typically because food stamps start to run out. So you see more folks come in at the end of the month.
At the end of the month. Oh, that's 30-some percent. That's huge.
Yeah, so now we're averaging between 80 and 90 folks in the beginning of the month and close to 150 at the end. So it is a huge increase.
And where does the Salvation Army get their foods and monies for this? Because if everyone else and all the other businesses, and I can speak for my business, I can speak for WNRN, it's ever more difficult to get people to come in and spend their monies at your place, to get people to donate monies to your place. So how does the Salvation Army do that?
Well, we use the Area Food Bank, which is a great, great help to us. We get donations, just people dropping stuff by. Different schools will have food drives for us. St. Anne's just recently at Christmas time did a pretty big drive. And you have to remember that our food is not only going to the soup kitchen, but we have social services where folks come who need sort of our food pantry. And so we have to supply the food pantry with food as well. So we rely a lot on donations and the food bank.
I have this vision in my head of the soup kitchen, and my guess is that it's really nothing like what's actually there. You know, too many good or bad movies is this line of people standing outside in the cold, in their, I guess, their clothes that have been, they're doing the best they can with any donated clothing, et cetera. Right. And they walk up and this glop is ladled onto their plate.
Now, our food is actually very, very good. We have excellent staff that prepare breakfast and lunch. And then almost every night, we have a church that comes in and brings their own food and prepares dinner for folks. So we're very, very fortunate. We could not run the way that we do without these volunteers. It's amazing to see the folks that come in and what they do. So we're always grateful. I'm not sure how many churches, but it's a lot of churches. They, you know, rotate, take turns. And then there are individual families that come in that want to do dinner. And then sometimes people just come in to help serve. So it takes a big, makes a huge difference to have the folks come in at night because they bring their own food. So they don't use our food.
One of the things that when I was doing my research for this was that the Darden School, the graduate business school here at UVA, has volunteers sign up and participate as serving volunteers mm-hmm. every weekend, correct?
Every weekend, right, Saturdays and Sundays.
Do you get that from any other non-religious groups who do this on a regular basis?
I don't know the answer to that off the top of my head, but there are several different families that come in on a regular basis, and we have individuals that come in on a regular basis and give us their time as well. Again, we could not run without volunteers. They are essential.
I'm reading these notes that Sean is passing along to me. An anonymous caller would like to hear about the families at the Salvation Army and what they're like.
I don't know exactly if they want sort of composition
Let's start with some of the basic, which is, yeah, let's start with composition. You mentioned families when we were talking about the transitional housing, and that because the male and female sides are split up, the possibility that parents may have to choose to be separated from their children.
Right, in the shelter.
In the shelter.
Yeah. Well, right now, I believe we've got, I think we have three families. I know for sure we've got two in the shelter. But I don't, again, I don't run the shelter, so I'm not as familiar with who's there right now.
How many families as opposed to singles in the transitional housing?
Right now we do have an opening, a family opening, but currently we have three singles, and then we've got a single mom and three children. We've got a mom and dad and two children. We've got a husband and wife. We've got a single mom and two children, and then a single mom and one child.
So it sounds, if I caught on to that, it's more single parent.
Typically, that's what we see, but not always.
And you also mentioned more parents with children than you did husband-wife.
Right.
Is that a consistency that is often there?
That is a consistency.
All right. 979-0919. Call up with your question or your comment. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. We're talking about transitional housing, the soup kitchen, and some of the other programs at the Salvation Army with Marnie Allen, who's the director of the soup kitchen and the housing program. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Virginia's Republican Senator John Warner is now officially retired after 30 years. But is it true his next career is turning environmentally green? Forget the dog days of summer, it's now the dog days of winter. And thanks to one local woman, our area outdoor dogs are getting warm living quarters this season. And should vendors on Charlottesville's downtown mall be assigned spaces on a first-come, first-served basis, or should they pay more for prime spots? The rebricking of our mall brings new questions into play. The Hook, a great gift for any birthday, even though it might be free. Alt Energy is a big supporter of WNRN. They're known for designing and installing solar energy systems in Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Alt Energy solar systems are now practical and reliable and can pay for themselves in just a few years while reducing your carbon footprint. You can also make a difference by showering instead of taking a bath, making sure computers are off or set to hibernate when not in use. More is at altenergyincorporated.com. And Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, if it's keeping warm and having fun in the outdoors this winter, Blue Ridge has the gear for you. Whether your outdoor adventure is winter running, hiking, climbing, or snowshoeing, you'll find Blue Ridge Mountain Sports in the Barracks Road Shopping Center here in Charlottesville, the Mountain Inn at Wintergreen, or at brms.com. And WNRN reminds you that Piedmont Virginia's Community College spring semester registration is going on right now. At PVCC, you can be ready for a technology or healthcare career in just 2 years. Classes begin on Tuesday. You can get more info and register online at pvcc.edu. Opportunity, access, excellence, Piedmont Virginia Community College. All right, back in action here with Marnie from the Salvation Army. Marnie, my question is about religion and what it plays into the Salvation Army, because I think that's one of the most associated aspects of the Salvation Army. And so my question is, are there any religious requirements, not necessarily that you have to be Christian or wear a cross around your neck or anything else, but do you have to do anything particular to qualify for these, other than you say no alcohol, no drug use? What else?
Well, for transitional housing, certainly you don't have to go to church. That's not part of the requirement. You know, the Salvation Army is a church in and of itself, so there is a part of the core where the, you know, the our captains also are the what you would associate as a minister for the church. Certainly that's a big part of their mission in trying to get the word out, but they don't impose that on the residents of transitional housing or the emergency shelter. I encourage people to find a support network for themselves, whatever that may be. Oftentimes it's through a church. It could be through some kind of support group. But I think one of the things I like for folks to be able to do is to be able to have some kind of network where they can, you know, talk to other people and be a part of something sort of larger than themselves, if you will, because I think it makes people feel more secure and just sort of helps them be productive.
I see somebody's on the toll-free line. 979-0919 is open. I'm curious a couple things about the children in transitional housing. Is how do you keep a child in the same school system? Is that a possibility as they move from wherever homeless facility they were staying in to transitional housing and then maybe to a more permanent housing?
Okay, so there's a law in place, McKinney-Vento, which as much as we can, we try to keep folks in their home school, but it depends on feasibility. There are several factors that go into making that decision. McKinney-Vento, there is a representative in Charlottesville City Schools. There is a representative for Albemarle County Schools. I meet with them on a regular basis. So when I say a homeschool, for instance, if a family were to become homeless in the county schools and they came to stay with us, we would work with the county and the city to provide transportation to try to keep them in their home school for that year to provide consistency for the children. Now, I will tell you it's not always feasible. It's not always possible. If someone's coming from a school system that's 2 hours away, it's just too cost prohibitive for the school systems to be able to transport. But it is definitely something that we try to do as much as we can.
All right, I got an anonymous question here, and I think Doug hung up because he didn't want to wait. Doug can call back in a little bit if you'd like. An anonymous caller from Charlottesville wanted to hear about some of the individual success stories that have gone on at the Salvation Army and within your programs?
Okay. We have a lot of success stories.
Give me two or three.
Right. Part of the reason that we see a lot of success in transitional housing is because of the length of time folks stay. In general, I can tell you we've got four folks that are in college now that have never been in college before, which I think is fantastic. We've got a fellow who, when he came, was completely illiterate. He can read and write his name now. We've had several people that have moved on to housing and are successful members of the community. When I say successful, I mean they're working and they're able to afford their housing. We've got folks that, I'm trying to think, five folks that have opened checking accounts that have never used the banking system before. So I think that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, and I guess the one that caught my attention was someone who is or was illiterate.
Mm-hmm.
I think we did, and I'm going to screw up the name of the program, but Virginia Literacy of America was here at the end of September as we talked about some of the things that they do. How do you get someone who is illiterate to be literate in what seems like a fairly short amount of time, which is can be especially difficult as an adult?
Right. Again, volunteers. I try to link folks with services that are appropriate to them. In this case, this gentleman was paired with a volunteer from UVA who worked with him, and he's not, doesn't sit down and read a novel, but he's, he's learning to read, but he can read and write his name now. So it is a challenge. Two folks right now are with literacy volunteers. And then there are several adult education classes. One of my residents right now is currently taking a GED class through one of the adult ed programs. So there are resources, the trick is to link the person with the right resource that works for them.
The phone lines are open right now. 979-0919, 877-WNRN-ROCKS is the toll-free line here as we talk about some of the programs at the Salvation Army. And let's thank Blue Ridge Graphics for helping put this program on the air today at NRN. They're at Meade Avenue and East High Street here in Charlottesville, providing custom T-shirts and sportswear plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, and at brgtshirts.com. So dial up, ask your question, make your comment. Marnie, childcare was something that we chatted about a little bit before coming on the air today. Childcare program at Salvation Army.
Yes, we have an excellent childcare program. You just have to call and see if space is available. Do you want me to talk about rates or?
Well, I guess I'm just curious about how it works. Is this available for anyone?
This is available for anyone. There's a rate for anyone. And then shelter residents can have their children in child care free of charge. And transitional housing can have their children in the program at a reduced rate.
Now, I don't know if I misread it or if it was mistyped, but I thought that the website said 5:30 a.m. That can't possibly be correct.
I don't believe that's correct.
All right, so what are the hours of the child care system?
I believe it's 8 to 5:30.
Okay. And what happens if someone's job is actually an evening job? Because we all know that being the service industry that Charlottesville and Albemarle are, that it's one thing to provide child care for the 9-to-5 worker, when there are such a huge majority of jobs out there
right.
for the $8 an hour, $10 an hour employee.
Yep. This is where I try to get residents to think outside the box and be creative. This is, again, why it's important to have a network of folks. I know that my residents have been wonderful helping each other out, and you know, if, especially if you work a retail job, you're not only talking, you know, nights, you're talking weekends. And weekend daycare is particularly even more difficult than finding nighttime. So it's important to, you know, when you talk about a sense of community and reaching out and, you know, my residents have done an incredible job of helping each other out. And hopefully that's a skill that they'll be able to take when they go elsewhere and they can network and link with other parents. It's a skill that some people have naturally and other people need to know how to do that. That's something that I definitely work with my residents on. The other thing is, you know, really thinking outside the box. What, for example, you can, someone who does in-home daycare can get funding from social services. You have to, I think, take first aid and CPR, but then you can register as a provider with social services. And in that sense, some of my residents have actually been able to get paid through social services for providing daycare, which is kind of a, I don't know how some people may see that as playing the system a little bit. But
I don't know. It sounds pretty awesome to me because
yeah,
you mentioned, as you know, when you bring it into the same factor that you mentioned earlier about people helping other people in the shelter or in the transitional housing, to me that seems like, wouldn't you rather get paid that way than having somebody on welfare, et cetera, et cetera?
Exactly.
So it seems to be a more efficient way to spend our money.
Absolutely.
All right, 11:52 on the wake-up calls. We talk about some of the programs at the Salvation Army here in Charlottesville. Marnie Allen is director of transitional housing and the soup kitchen. Volunteers. We chatted briefly about the Darden School students coming down and a lot of the area churches being volunteers. You know, one of the questions that popped up in my mind becoming prepared for today, we have such a large number of businesses that, I guess not dependent, but ride the roller coaster of the university in terms of when the students are in town, when the students are not in town. And I was thinking, has anyone approached the university about saying, hey, you have these wonderful buildings with this wonderful kitchen. Can't we turn the soup kitchen, turn one of the university cafeterias into the soup kitchen during the winter months, you know, or during that time frame from mid-December to early January? To expand it, to make it more like a very homey restaurant type setting for anyone. Has the university approached you about offering anything?
No, that hasn't happened, but we do get a lot of donations from the university when they have functions. They'll bring in leftover food for us. So we definitely benefit from the university quite a bit. I think, you know, when you, it's a wonderful idea that you have. And I think one of the things that's great about the Salvation Army is it's sort of centrally located. Folks, you know where it is. They know the hours of operations. And I think, you know, once you're sort of established and then if, you know, change can always sort of be difficult. I think you get into logistics of storing food and other things, but the university definitely supports the Salvation Army in many, many ways. So,
you know, you mentioned the university with leftover food from their functions, and that was something that we were talking about earlier was, you know, the availability or the legality of area restaurants donating leftover foods. I know that there's a federal bill, the Bill Emerson Good Samaritan Food Donation Act, that actually went into law in 1996 that allowed people to donate grocery foods. And I don't know that it eliminated, but it reduced any liability if somebody else got sick off your food. Now, you weren't allowed to make it, you know, dangerous and then contribute it. But I think that a lot of the area restaurants in town are unsure of their what they're allowed to do by the health department in terms of donating food. And you and I were talking about trying to figure that out and
mm-hmm.
and I guess share with all the potential donations that are out there from the many restaurants that we have.
Right. I know the restaurants that currently donate, anything that they have comes to us frozen. So, and then, you know, we have our own procedures, you know, that follow the guidelines of how to store things. But anything that we get that's donated from a restaurant, it is frozen. So I know that they're following that rule in terms of safety food handling.
What kind of things do you receive?
We receive all kinds of things. I cannot disclose the names of the restaurants, but we get all kinds of, you know, potatoes and different things that they can't serve the next day, but that we can reinvent into other things.
Okay. 11:57 here in the Wake Up Call as we finish our hour with Marnie Allen from the area Salvation Army. You are listening to WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. And not that you would, but in the next few minutes at noon, Drew Thompson will be here for Les Temps Purdue. If French isn't your thing, that means the time's gone by here at WNRN. That's ladies and 80s and 90s alternative. Stay tuned at noon. Les Temps Purdue brought to you in part by Plant 9 Music. All right, Marnie, let's finish up with what seems to be two of the most important things at the Salvation Army, which are volunteers and donations.
Right.
So how do people volunteer? I mean, obviously you can make a call and you can come down. So I'm curious about that in two ways. What would somebody do? And can you do anything from home? Because it seems like a lot of people, oh, I have kids. I can't do something after 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock and I have my job. But are there jobs and tasks that people can donate their time for that they can do from their house?
That's a great question, and I would encourage folks to call our volunteer services coordinator. She would know about all of those potential projects and different things going on that folks would be able to volunteer with. We do have projects that happen in a very short time frame, so it would not require an ongoing time commitment. It would be sort of a one-shot deal. And then there are opportunities that are ongoing. So I would just encourage you, our volunteer services coordinator's name is Lisa Chapman, and she's a wonderful gal to work with, and she'd be able to hook you up with whatever your interest is.
Are there any upcoming events where people can donate their money?
Our biggest event that's coming up right now is Shoes for the Homeless, and this is in partnership with the local podiatry association. That's happening Friday, February 13th, and Saturday, February 14th. Friday is in the evening. Saturday is in the morning. We definitely still need volunteers. We also need shoes. You can always, if you're looking to give monetarily, you can do that online. You don't have to send a check in. So that's always an option as well.
And when you're talking about shoes, are you talking about brand new shoes, or can I go through my closet? And
gently used, if you're going to send used in, gently used.
Okay. All right. Marnie, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
And next week we'll have Professor David C. Smith from the McIntyre School of Commerce here at UVA. As we talk about, some of the economic issues going on in the economy, soon to be President Obama's stimulus package, and so forth. So join us again next week on the Wake Up Call. Next up, Drew Thompson, Les Temps Purdue.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at wakeupcall@WNRN.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.